Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Todd.
Well, here we are. The band is back together here as we begin the new year. We kind of did on Friday. Friday was a very strange day because it was the day after New Year's Day, but it very much felt like an extension of the holiday.
Yes.
Like, it didn't feel like we're ringing in the new year on January 2nd because it was a Friday. So many people were off. We kind of just loosely labeled today, Monday, as the day we would go official with the kickoff.
It's so true. I remember all my days in TV news, I always felt like there were certain holidays where you really felt like you were making a difference. You were part of the culture on the holiday. Thanksgiving, as an example, 4:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, doing the news. You have a lot of people who are in the kitchens. They're getting their grand meals together. I always felt like when I was working New Year's Day on the morning shift, the only people who were up were probably just had the TV on, left the TV on from the night before.
From overnight, they were
sleeping, or they were just getting home, and I didn't feel like they were paying attention to news.
Well, good. Glad to have you back, Jessica. Glad to have you back as well with us on Wisconsin's Midday News.
And now it's time for three big things on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one. Kids are back in school today after the holiday break, and they return as cases of the flu continue to rise. That's right. Flu activity is now very high in Wisconsin. That's the highest level it goes on the state's activity scale. And we're not alone. The CDC says flu activity is at high or very high levels in 32 states. That's up from 17 the previous week. A new flu variant is adding to the rise and complicating vaccine effectiveness. It does have a medical name with letters and numbers, but you can just call it the super flu. That's easy to remember, and it stresses it is just not good. And remember, it is not too late to get vaccinated.
Number two, Olympic speed skating hopefuls at the Pettit Center today for the final day of Olympic trials. 4-day event started on Friday, featuring sellout crowds over the weekend. Limited tickets available for tonight. It's been quite a few days for Kewaskum native Jordan Stoltz. He actually fell at the start of the 1,000-meter race. Still managed to finish third.
I just didn't have my feeling when I went to the line, and I got a little wide and then toe-picked. I was able to get right back on my feet and keep going. So, I mean, I felt good. I've been doing a lot of training, so I felt actually pretty good for how I did today. So
this is how good Jordan Stoltz is. He was pre-qualified in every event that he participated in, which means his finish in that event didn't matter so long as he started the race.
Wow.
That's exactly what happened in the 1,500 meters. He skated a few strides and then just barreled off the side of the track, and the other racers went about their business. Stoltz did win the 500 meters, for what it's worth. He is scheduled to compete tonight in the mass start, another event he's pre-qualified in based upon the World Cup standings. So he said, did so well throughout the course of the year leading up to Olympic trials. He's already in, and he is going to be a gold medal favorite. He is the best skater in the world, right here from Kewaskum, and doing his training and work at the Pettit Center whenever he is in town. So he'll be one of those hopefuls you follow, the local hometown heroes that we like to talk about.
Sure.
He is near that top of that list going into Italy.
Gotta love that. Number three, the road to the playoffs starts now. The Green Bay Packers take on the Chicago Bears in Saturday's wild card showdown. It is time to get pumped, fans. Today, the Packers announced a week-long celebration of events. We're talking about everything from writing letters to Lambeau. Not Santa. That's done. Writing letters to Lambeau. That's just a blast.
I like it. People are going to get behind it because it's Packers, it's Bears, it's playoffs. Everything just means a little bit more.
So writing letters to Lambeau, daily sweepstakes, merch giveaways, and chances to win tickets and sign gear. Rock your green and gold on Friday. The kids going to school, you're going to work. How about some green and gold? And if you're heading down to Chicago, join the free Packers pep rally Friday afternoon. Will's Northwoods Inn is hosting the pep rally at 4, so that's always a great place for fans. Kickoff Saturday at Soldier Field is 7 p.m.
1:14 on WTMJ. Big day in court in New York. Does the takeover of Venezuela by the U.S. violate international law? And what about Nicolas Maduro, who today declared himself innocent against federal drug trafficking charges? We'll get to the bottom of the legal proceedings and happenings on the other side. It's 1:14. Well, when news broke of Saturday's raid and extraction of the Venezuelan president and his wife, many questions came to light about the legalities of such an operation. Does the takeover of Venezuela by the United States violate international law? And what about Nicolas Maduro, who just today, about an hour ago, declared himself innocent and a, quote, decent man as he pleaded not guilty to federal drug trafficking charges in New York City? Wanted to welcome in CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Let's start there, Thane, with the plea today from Nicolas Maduro. What does this arraignment lead to as he has remained under custody in New York?
So, Greg, anytime your audience hears the word, listeners hears the words arraignment, that just means the clock starts on the criminal prosecution. The arraignment only means that it's the very first time that the indictment is unsealed and the actual charges are read to the defendant, after which the judge says, do you plead guilty or innocent? And he pleaded innocent, so did his wife. And the clock now starts. The prosecution begins. They were certainly going to be denied bail. They're going to be held here in New York, which is, seems in the same place that Jeffrey Epstein was at. And Mangione is now still in awaiting trial. And it all begins today. But remember, this is a criminal prosecution, but you started the segment by saying, you know, taking over Venezuela. So, you know, what's interesting about this case is that President Trump kept using the words the most successful military operation, right? But then he was, the way Marco Rubio described it was, well, we were sort of doing the work of the Justice Department because they asked us a favor. Can you go pick them up? This is a criminal matter. This is not a war. We're not at war. We just have, this guy has, and we have an indictment against him from 6 years. We just now have a superseding indictment that includes his wife. We want him in a New York courtroom. Could you go pick him up? So there's a big difference between invading a country and sticking around, and which looks like it's wartime activity, as opposed to an extradition where you're just saying, I just want to take someone who has a date with our courtroom for a criminal prosecution. We got to get him over here. That's all we're really trying to do. So it looks weird because it looks like, on one hand, it looks like it's a military operation that will lead to the transition of a new government. On the other hand, this is not being handled under international law. It's not being handled as under international humanitarian law or the laws of armed conflict. It's being handled under regular federal laws dealing with narcotics.
So, Thane, the new development today is this first court appearance in New York. Can you kind of paint the picture for us? Because it's different. In federal court, you don't have the cameras. So I was telling our fans during our first hour, he was in shackles and he was wearing those orange jail slippers, wearing headphones to listen through the interpreter. As far as the allegations in court today, can you break those down for us? What exactly he and his wife are accused of, and the other defendants as well? Because they aren't the only two involved here.
Yeah, well, you know, Jessica, the thing that's interesting about this case is, first of all, it's the same charges that we had against Noriega, the former strongman of Panama. Essentially a mirror image case, and he was sentenced to 22 years in jail. They're all really related to drug trafficking, money laundering, and in this case also the possession of machine guns, which seems weird. Like, why is that a charge? It's his country. Can he have machine guns in his own house? And the answer, I guess, to that is that our position is that you're sort of a president of a country in name only. We see you as the kingpin, as part of this drug cartel. We see you as committing, allowed the instrumentalities of government to help the drug cartels and the gangs that is essentially invaded our country and poisoned our country. And so everything that you have at your disposal that allowed you to make these vessels that carried drugs come to the United States unimpeded, we see that as part of a racketeering criminal enterprise, and we see you as the kingpin. You can imagine his lawyers are going to argue, are you kidding? I'm afraid of the gangs. I'm afraid of the cartels. I'm not in charge of anything. I'm lucky to be the president. You ever take a look at these gangs? So it's going to be interesting to watch that. He's going to say, yeah, I understand. We have a drug problem in our country too. The difference is the Trump administration is going to point, the Justice Department is going to point out, yes, but you benefited financially. Apparently his wife was getting, I think, $100,000 a month from the cartels. And so that's the other issue about why it was his family benefiting. If you were simply a sovereign leader of a state, why are you participating in the drug trade?
So Thane, let's say it's ultimately determined that the U.S. use of force and the capture of Maduro and his wife was a violation of the U.N. Charter and international law. Unlawful. Can't do it. Do all the court proceedings regarding Maduro and his wife, do those just end? Is he sent back to Venezuela, sort of takes back business as usual and goes about his business?
Well, it depends who makes that ruling, right? I mean, if the judge in this case makes a ruling that this was an improper, you know, transfer of a foreign sovereign to another country. I mean, remember, the United States are not signatories to the International Criminal Court, the ICC. They have no jurisdiction over the United States. So the question is, who's making that ruling? You know, the UN, of course, as well as most smaller countries, are going to say, this is an example of the American imperialistic American government using its power as a colonialist government. But unless the federal judge in this courtroom is going to say, I think this was an improper capture and he should be sent back. Remember, we saw that with respect to some of these immigration cases, right, where judges turned in and said, we improperly sent you back to Venezuela. It's interesting that it still continues to be Venezuela. But no, I mean, you know, international law is very fuzzy and it doesn't have the same kind of, you know, teeth. You know, you always hear people say things like it's a violation of international law. And then when you ask your question, what is that law? They go, I don't know. No one knows what those is. They go, oh, I don't know what it means, but I hear it's in violation of international law. I can assure you the United States' position is it is not because he's properly charged in this country with committing crimes in the United States. And even though he's a sovereign, we don't consider him a sovereign leader. We consider him a dictator who took over his country when he lost an election. So we don't see this in the same way that the United Nations sees this. We see this as a guy who's really involved in the drug business, who happens to be running a country improperly, and he's going to be in our courtroom standing trial for the crimes that he committed against the United States in criminal court. Again, we're not at war. This is simply a extradition, not an act an act that is evaluated under the laws of armed conflict.
Thane, at the beginning, you had mentioned bail and that a judge likely would not request bail, which I agree with that. But I was a little bit surprised, I guess, that there was no immediate request for bail, that they didn't request it, even if they thought they wouldn't get it. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think they wouldn't get it. And remember, I didn't know until it was happening, well, who his lawyers were. He didn't have any lawyers in them, right? So, you know, I assumed, honestly, that by the time you and I are on the phone, I assumed I would say to you, nothing happened. he showed up. He said, I don't have a lawyer, and I don't have to say anything. I want to have a lawyer, and we have to figure out how he got a lawyer. So he did have a lawyer, and he got a high-priced criminal defense lawyer who does white-collar stuff. But no, I think that, you know, they can always make the request at some future date. You know, it was extraordinary on its face, right? This was, you know, you think we're getting used to this by now. There was Harvey Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein, but this is a guy who was the head of a foreign country. We had other examples of things. Remember Saddam Hussein, we pulled him out of a hole, you know, in Iraq.
Yeah,
right.
Huge.
You know, right. There have been examples of this, but never before have we, Osama bin Laden was assassinated in his home compound. There are people who said, what do you mean assassinated? Why don't you just bring him back and give him due process, right? So there were people then who were complaining, saying, do we have the right to go to a foreign country and assassinate somebody? In those cases, because it was a post-9/11 experience, most Americans didn't complain. Nowadays, you're hearing people judging Trump saying, did he have the legal authority to essentially kidnap a foreign leader and bring him to the United States? Maduro's argument is, I'm a sovereign leader of a sovereign country. And you have no authority to do this. This is just not something that gets done. And we'll see how that plays out in court.
Good information, as always, from CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, we appreciate your time. We'll check it again soon.
Thank you.
Anytime for you both. Thank you.
So I was closing out the work week last week on Friday, and I was looking ahead thinking like, oh, wow, Monday and Tuesday look pretty mild. But I didn't see the extended forecast of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday last week on Friday doing the program. But now I've got a good look at it, and boy, we are in for maybe a treat here, or will it be kind of soggy, sloppy, messy? Could be both. Let's welcome in Brian Nisnansky, chief meteorologist for TMJ4. Hey, Nis.
Yo, what's going on, guys? You're right. We got a nice official January thaw underway, and it's going to get warmer almost each day this week.
Get the pedal tavern out, right? And crank that thing up in January.
Not quite, but I did take down the Christmas decorations outdoors today.
There you go.
And there's some good opportunity to do so this week. Some weather elements to be concerned about, which we'll talk about, but much of the week is going to be mild and probably better weather taking those decorations down versus the weather you had putting them up if you waited until after Thanksgiving.
So mild temperatures, of course, but I also see some chances for rain. How much rain might we get, and when are we going to see it?
Yeah, so the best chance of rain will be arriving tomorrow morning and continues through at least the first half of the day, and then we might even still have some scattered rain and snow showers again in the afternoon and evening. But the bulk of the rainfall looks to be tomorrow during the morning hours. And go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw tonight with a low of 32 and a chance of rain. That made me think maybe freezing rain or slippery conditions. Any concern there?
No, not too much. Unless you're listening and you're well north of Milwaukee, I suppose if you're up towards Fond du Lac and beyond, there is a chance. And if you look at a map through the National Weather Service, you go even north of there, you start to get into central Wisconsin, northeastern Wisconsin. There is a winter weather advisory there, and that's where we're expecting more in the way of freezing rain. The reason why I'm not too concerned, even though you do see that low temperature right at freezing, I think as that precipitation arrives, temperatures warm up. So you see that low of 32, that will likely be during the early overnight hours. And then by the time that rain moves in, we will be above freezing. And again, not too concerned because we had a mild day today, so the ground isn't necessarily, you know, extremely cold. Sure, it's cold enough to have some sort of ice, but we're above average, and that's going to help things out as well.
Interesting that you say above average, because over the weekend I was in Cabo and I was telling the people it was much warmer for December in Cabo than they typically have it. So I think some of the people at the resort, they definitely told us it was like a little too hot for them because they're not used to it December, and it was a little humid. And I said, well, we are loving it because we are from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And when we left, I think it was like 23 when we left on January 1st in the morning. I sent it in and it felt like it was 13, and they were just like, woo!
Yeah. What was that? What temperatures did you have? What were you guys having?
So we had the high 80s, and nice. I think the final day was, we were only there for a couple days, but was a little bit humid. Yeah. But it's usually, I mean, much warmer than, of course, Wisconsin is, but usually I think they have it in the 70s, and it's warm, but not like that. But it's always kind of fun to tell people that you're from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and here's what it's like in January.
Yeah, you lucked out. I mean, you go to those places for that warmth. I'm sure at times it was a little too warm, but yeah, people... When you go on vacation and you talk Wisconsin, people'll associate you with being in cold temperatures. But it's interesting that you bring that up down there because you're right, because upper 80s would be warm for them this time of year. You must have a pretty good onshore flow or offshore flow from the south in order to do that, because obviously Cabo's surrounded by water and the water temperature is typically 70s, maybe close to 80 this time of year.
Yeah, that sounds pretty darn nice. I know we're not going to reach those kind of depths in Lake Michigan, but it feels like we're far removed from the polar plunge from about a week ago.
Yeah, and there really isn't a sign of it, like, turning on its head again. Like, there's some signs that by the weekend we get back closer to average. Then, I mean, by Thursday, some of us could get close to 50 degrees.
Ow.
And then it gets cooler, gets a little closer to average over the weekend. But I'm not seeing a major like plunge or our next big Arctic outbreak yet on the 7-day forecast. Gonna have to watch a system. Models are trying to get a handle on it. For the end of the week, Friday into Saturday, if that one pans out, the potential is there for some accumulating snow, but it's going to be, I think, one of those where we're going to find ourselves on a fine line between, you know, slop or rainy mix and all snow. So just kind of stay up with that one.
Yeah, this is the time of the year with the chances for rain and the warming temperatures. You let the dog go out, and then you have to make sure you've got the towel because they have the wet paws that come in. You got to dry them off, make sure they're clean.
Yeah. Oh, the salt, too. I can't stand the salt that gets in the house. My floor that comes in from the garage is like this, like, and I like the color. It's just this time of year. It's like this dark green that, like, literally every footprint shows up on it. And it's
so
just
true.
It's what it is. You know, you can only throw out enough of those rubber mats, you know, when you got kids that just come tracking everything in.
Well, congratulations on getting through 16 days of the kids being at home not in school. It's a challenge for every parent.
This is peaceful. I'm sitting here in the office. I got in like early on purpose. I mean, obviously I got things to do, but like more than anything, it just does feel good to get back in the routine. Don't get me wrong. Love the family time. Don't take that for granted. But I needed some normalcy for sure.
All good stuff, Niz. We'll check in again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Niz.
You got it, guys. See ya.
You bet. Above normal temperatures for the rest of the week. It's 144 on WTMJ.
It's time for Pack Yak on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Well, it wasn't the prettiest of games, but kind of knew that going in for the Packers. The big question I had going up to the week, or leading up to the game, I should say, is rest versus rust. What's most important here? You want to be healthy, yes, of course, and Matt LaFleur has seen good players go down in the final game of a regular season, meaningless game, and tear their ACL. That happened to Christian Watson last year, the team's best wide receiver. You're also looking at Jordan Love, who, after that concussion against Chicago, is now going to go into the playoffs without having taken a snap in a game in 10 quarters. So he prioritized health over any sort of rhythm that you may have been able to establish on the field in Minnesota yesterday. So the Packers lose 16-3. The result of that game is really insignificant. Now it's all about the playoffs, but Matt LaFleur is standing by the decision to rest many of his key players during yesterday's game.
We had a pretty good week of practice, I felt like, this last week for the guys that we were trying to rest. They did get a lot of reps. We won a lot of good on good and our one offense versus our one defense. And so I think we're physically in a better place.
Yeah, so he tried to keep people sharp throughout the course of the practice week with Jordan Love taking number one reps and all that kind of stuff. And then it was the Clayton Toon show. And for those keeping score at home, the Packers had a guy named Clayton Toon on the roster. He played quarterback, and I use quarterback in air quotes because I'm not really sure what I saw yesterday.
Rough. I'll tell you what, you know me, I'm always watching the Packers games. I like to go to them, but I did not see it yesterday. And I think there was one other game that I couldn't watch, but I think I watched it later. I watched highlights. I took in all the social media. But this one, I didn't see. We were out of town, and I saw the score, and I felt like I don't
good
need
to
see
miss.
That one.
Good one to miss.
16-3. But here's the thing. You're so right. It's all about being healthy, right? It's all about being healthy for the playoffs. We didn't want somebody else. I mean, gosh, our injury list was so long for a while there. So you don't want anyone extra going in. And here we are. We're in the playoffs. Let's win this next one against the Bears. And then let's win the next one and the next one.
That was the interesting bit of drama going into yesterday's game. The Packers had no control over their first-round playoff opponent, right? Win or lose in Minnesota. They're locked into that number seven seed, but the drama was playing out in that late afternoon window because you had the Eagles and Commanders playing, and then you had the Bears and Lions also playing, and they kicked off at the same time. So these games were kind of neck and neck, and were both very close games, decided in the final quarter. The Bears-Lions game decided in the final seconds with the Lions knocking in that game-winning field goal. So I watched that game more intently than I did the Packers game. Because the Bears played their guys. Their guys were on the field
and now
playing
they're banged
to
up.
Win. little banged up, right? You got a short week, so Chicago played all their guys. Now you got a short week going into Saturday night's game. The Packers will definitely be more rested. You could argue there's a potential for rust. Sure, I get it. It's always one or the other, right? It's either look great, boy, that bit of week of rest was helpful, or you're kind of sloppy and, boy, that team is rusty. Could have used some time on the field. Like, this world of absolutes apparently lives when you get to this world. But that was the idea. Rest your starters. Be ready to go. Green Bay did not know it would have a short week and a Saturday game, but the schedule makers believe that is the game to watch in the opening weekend of the playoffs.
And how about all these Saturday games? I feel like we've had more Saturday games this season than I remember in a long time. I mean, I haven't looked at the whole schedule, but I just feel like it's been Saturday night after Saturday night.
Yeah, as soon as college football ends, the NFL is good about sneaking in there and adding some Saturday games to the schedule. But they also enter the world of flex scheduling. When you get toward the end of the year, they try and put as many compelling matchups in those Saturday time slots because it's the only game on. Like, that's the game you're watching. So you don't want to have it be a game against two sub-500 teams or non-playoff teams. No, you're going for ratings here. And certainly the Packers were kind of in the mix, along with the teams they played, of improving playoff position. So you got a team on riding a four-game losing streak. But as you pointed out, and I think it's a good way to look at it, it doesn't matter anymore. Like that is done. It's over with. Now it's all about the Bears and moving forward. Daniel Whelan, the punter. We don't often hear from the punter, but we are today.
So we're the Green Bay Packers, man. That's why. We're a good team. So I think we can win it all this year. So
asked why he believes the team can win. Because we're the Green Bay Packers, man. We're a good team.
And we can win it all. Well, I like that. I like his optimism. I'll take it. I like that energy.
A little bit of shade being thrown by Bears head coach Ben Johnson. So Ben Johnson, if you
what
remember.
Now?
Right? I mean, that's kind of the thing. Like, for whatever reason, Matt LaFleur and the Packers, it just cannot get out of his head. Now, he could have been throwing a little shade at the Philadelphia Eagles, who benched a lot of their starting players in Sunday's game against Washington. And the Packers also rested their starters. But Philly had something to play for. The Packers really did not. The Bears opted to play their guys, and they lost.
We're quickly turning the page here. Everyone's disappointed. I appreciate, like I said, their effort. You know, some teams, they rest their starters. We don't. We play football, and, you know, and we felt like it was really important that we were playing our best ball here today, and we didn't get that job done.
So hopefully just four more quarters of football here for the Bears, and their season will be over, and we'll be done with Ben Johnson for another several months.
Well, here's the thing. He could have said the beginning of that quote, and I would have been fine with it. You know, some teams, they bench their starters. I think that would have been okay. It was that little at the end when he says, we play football. Okay.
Yeah, how about just, you know, we thought it was best for us. It was important. Still had a lot to play for. We want to be sharp. You know, we risk the pros and cons. We think this is best for us, and nobody bats an eye. But you throw a not-so-subtle veiled shot at two opponents here in the NFC, two playoff opponents, by the way, or playoff teams, and it's going to garner some headlines. The Bears did not play well yesterday. Like, that was apparent to me. If I were going to handpick who I would want the Packers to play in the first round of the playoffs between the Eagles and Bears, no doubt, hands down, 1,000%, I would pick the Bears every time.
And can we just for a moment, I think we've got a minute here, the other big game, in this game I did see the end of it, the Steelers game. Aaron Rodgers, he's going on, he's continuing on, and a lot of people were wondering, I mean, it could have been, well, some people were saying it could have been Aaron Rodgers' last game last night. No matter what his future entails and what he wants to do, last night wasn't his last game because the Steelers are off into the playoffs.
What an unbelievable game. If you're a casual fan or even not a casual fan, it was hard to turn your head away from that. Rodgers leads a touchdown drive with under a minute to go. The Steelers go on top. They can go up three. All they got to do is knock in the extra point. And a guy who hadn't missed an extra point all year misses the extra point. So now the Steelers are up two, less than a minute to go. The Ravens get a good kickoff return, which isn't common in today's NFL. And just a couple of plays later, all of a sudden they're at like the 20-yard line. It's like a 44-yard field goal, and they win the game. And then their field goal kicker, who had a wonderful season, isn't even close.
So to the right.
And the game's in Pittsburgh, so you go through these emotional swings on the sidelines and in the stands, and the net is that Aaron Rodgers has one more crack at a Super Bowl with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was not a great season for the Steelers, but they get in.
That was unbelievable. And then, of course, Aaron Rodgers was asked at the end, hey, you know, could this have been it for you? And it was funny. He didn't want to answer that question. But it was a valid question from the reporter.
That'll be an interesting question in the offseason, as it always is. If you're a quarterback in your 40s, the question's going to come up. Rodgers hinted earlier this year it may be it for him, but has also said he's had a lot of fun and is certainly not yet decided if he's going to hang it up.
It could be such a tough decision. Even my husband last night said he looks old.
Well, he does look old.
he is old, in quotes, for football.
I saw him try and run away from a defender last night. It didn't seem to go well. He can still throw it. He'll be able to throw it until he's 60, I believe. But, yeah, running, not so much his jam anymore.